In this episode, I sit down with my friend Blake, and we have a lovely discussion on how Nelson Nash challenges one's thinking in his work, Becoming Your Own Banker, particularly in the areas of money, banking, and thinking long range. Where do you want to end up in life? We had fun, and I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you.
What's wrong with just being able to do that if I found a vehicle where I can just put the money and save it? And it's been around for at least a century, right? I'm trying to be
well over.
Yeah, you know, but you know, years. What company do you know has been profitable for 100 years straight?
I know about personally.
Besides insurance companies.
I'm out. So I'm sure they exist.
And neither has anyone had a real estate investment that's only been positive for 100 years.
Yeah.
I can't even say a decade for most people. The buy and hold community out there, yeah. If they've had something for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, they've probably been fairly profitable on the long-term horizon. But you still have ups and downs in the middle of those, right, each year.
Well, on paper anyway, they probably hadn't realized most of those gains.
Well, yeah, but then you get into, you know, well, I got the tax deduction, yada, 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 you know. Yeah. So that's a whole other thing, right?
It'll getting be added into something back in when I sell it.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, did you remember that?
I remember that? I never forgot that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Dealing with taxes, you know, I got a private asset now that they will never know about, and I'm gonna keep it that way. And that just makes my life.
Let the insurance company deal with the IRS.
No kidding. You know, so.
I talk every day to clients and prospective clients, and that's why I do what I do, because I love people. It's not the paperwork. I hate the paperwork, but I love the people.
Yep.
So I have these, as you can imagine, you know, I mean, these lovely conversations, and they're not always easy peasy, but they're I enjoy them immensely, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you know, talking, you can almost pick any subject, but talking about taxes and real estate and the movement, how old do you want to grow with a real estate portfolio? And I know that's a simple question, but there's a broad perspective, you know, and everybody's individual and different, you know, and I can make up a lot of what ifs just like you can. But how old do you want to be managing this beautiful, large portfolio that you put your time, effort, and energy, you and your wife, mm-hmm. and then maybe your son too, you know, if we go out long enough.
Yep.
That's a lot of effort, time, and energy.
Yes.
And then maybe your child doesn't have a lick of interest in real estate. You know, how old do you want to be enjoying that portfolio and all the responsibility of managing it? And I'm specifically talking about real estate.
Right.
You know, it's like, could it work? Yeah, it could. It has worked for lots of people and lots of different situations. I can't imagine my beautiful wife, Jenna, and, you know, she's going to outlive me. Statistically, her people live longer than mine, and she's a younger female. And so I'm going to go first. And I can tell you what her answer would be, Blake. If I said, Jenna, how many of these properties you want to manage?
It's a rhetorical question, huh?
Huh?
It's a rhetorical question, yeah. Huh?
Of course, you know, Jake, he may want to, you know, who knows? I'm just saying that I don't even want her in that position.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. The only question she should have to answer is how much do you want it and when do you want it sent? Right?
Yep.
Make it easy.
Yep.
Yeah, are people even thinking about that? You know, that's the first rule, right? Thinking long range.
Yeah.
How long range have you thought? Have you thought to when you get to your, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s?
Yeah, all of a sudden you think, I should have thought about this earlier. Yeah. Yeah. So that probably starts somewhere along in your 40s. I know it did for me. And then it gets a little heavy in your 50s.
Yeah, you can begin to start making decisions based upon reacting and not being proactive, right? So we're making it from our heels. And that's the worst place to be in because you've, like you said, you got this body of work that you put all this love, you know, and energy into and sweat and tears that was supposed to pay off. And then it has paid off, but not the way you thought it would.
Yep. You know, I'm not a big social media guy, but I think I was on X. I've discovered X, okay, and Grok. So I'm on X. Of course, you look at something too long and that's all you're – feed gives you.
I don't know how that works, but yeah.
I was watching, I don't know if they're a podcaster. I don't know what you call them. Somebody that has a channel on X or whatever. Anyway, this young girl was, she was in a store like Walmart or what have you. And she was talking to this older gentleman. You know, she had the camera on. He'd agreed, you know, obviously he was having a conversation with her. And it got real personal, real, real quick. The guy, actually, I believe it was Walmart because he was working there. He works 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And he's in his 70s. He retired from a large American automobile manufacturing company. He retired in 1999 on a pension, had his health insurance and his life insurance there, part of the retirement package. Well known, you know, you probably drive one. If you don't drive one, you've probably driven one or your parents have one of the automobiles that this manufacturer makes. All right. And they filed bankruptcy in 2012. He lost his pension, the majority of it, like almost all of it. He lost his health care, and he lost all but like $10,000 in death benefit. So the guy had spent all of his whole career working for this one company, and it was all the benefits in there. That's where your life insurance is, health insurance. And his wife was starting to decline right before, somewhere in 2010 or 2011. They file bankruptcy. They get reformulated, and they're still building cars today. And then she passes away due to the stress.
Wow.
Right. And here it is. I think that was about 5 years ago. And so here he is working just to be able to live and have some kind of a modicum of the idea of retirement that he always thought he would have while working away at that company. And now I'm not beating the guy up. You know, this girl put on a, you know, I think she made it where you could donate to the guy or something like that.
Yep. And,
I'm just saying it's, you put all your eggs almost in one basket. This company that I'm working for, this idea that I bought into, whether it's real estate, gold, silver, cryptocurrency, whatever.
Yeah, 401ks, Roth IRAs.
Oh, whatever it is. Yeah. And then, boom, things happen. Life happens.
Yep.
Things that you can't control.
Yep.
And then your life changes.
It's funny you brought this story up because I just watched a special on people in their 70s and 80s that want to work, but they're working in something that they don't want to work in because they need a job and they don't have enough income to live the life they want to live.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like people don't want to work. It's the fact that they're not doing it on their own terms, and it should not have anything to do with money or the need for money. Yeah. And that act of, you know, that acting in desperation, that's just not a good place to be in, whatever phase of life you're in, but certainly not in that one. Because people in that age bracket, they just have much less to choose from in the form of, you know, opportunities out there to work. There's a lot less available to them, and that's unfortunate, but, you know, our society isn't – I don't think they're really teaching us anything aside from retirement. And I know Nelson didn't believe in retirement, more passive income, but most people are not prepared for what they consider retirement or whatever age that is.
No. I can attest to that. 34, 35 years in the financial, quote unquote, air quotes, in the financial world is either a life insurance agent, investment advisor, registered rep, or whatever. Yep. I've held, you know, many different positions, interested in many different facets of the quote unquote financial world. And people today, are really, there's a little bit of disconnection of reality from reality of what it really takes to enjoy your a lifestyle that you're accustomed to, would like to enjoy, and how much passive income, retirement income, I'll use the word retirement just so in conversation people understand clearly what I'm talking about, right?
Right.
It's like there's a real disconnect from reality.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Or what's happened?
You know, I don't know. I think that we haven't been taught the truth. I think we've been taught one narrative. you know, and it's typically by Wall Street or whomever selling whatever product they're selling. Yeah, and I get it. I'm a salesman, not a very good one, but I'm a salesman. I get that. And so I do sell products, and I'm a buyer too. I think it's really the overall narrative is influenced by Wall Street, the big bank, the big banks, the big investing houses, all of them. I'm not trying to disparage any of them. And even the government and all of its little facets and tentacles, it's like, I don't want you to think.
No.
Any depth. I want you to work hard. You just show up and do what you're told. You look at the education system. Are they teaching children how to think, or are they teaching children? I mean, they introduced the idea of a global citizen when I was in school.
Yeah.
Right. Are you teaching me to comply, or are you teaching me how to think? And I think it's very fundamental, and that's kind of where some of it starts. But it just continues throughout life in the whole narrative.
Yeah.
You know, so I know that's maybe didn't answer your question.
No, but I don't know. I don't think that they probably would admit that they don't believe we can make good decisions for ourselves.
Of course
they're not going to tell us that.
No, they're basing that thought on they can't make a good decision.
Correct. So they assume you can't either.
Yeah, they project that onto everyone. And right. When you said it earlier, like people, they want to work. They want to be creative. Right. And I believe people are intelligent. That's what we were talking about, intelligence. You don't need to abdicate your responsibility or your thinking to anyone. Right. And I think people are just – I think people are very creative and very intelligent. And part of the narrative, part of their experience going through this all-American dream is – you know, you abdicate your responsibility. You just keep your head down. Don't pay attention to what's really going on.
Right.
And, you know, you be a good, compliant worker.
I don't think most people would see it as abdication until you bring it to their attention.
That fair?
Because we don't have any other options out there, at least in the mainstream.
We don't think we do.
In the mainstream.
Right. They're not presented.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why something like this seems so foreign and so impossible, right? Why haven't I heard of this? Why don't I know somebody else is doing this? You know, like we have the herd mentality where, you know, we don't want to miss out on whatever else somebody else is doing.
And I don't want to be wrong.
That's right. But what results are those going to produce? So look around today. I mean, that's unfortunate. Unfortunately, that's inspiration for somebody like me to try not to end up in the same type of scenario when I get into my 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
But I may not have known that had I not seen it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have seen other people struggling, and I know a lot of good men in their 60s, 70s that don't want to stop working, but they don't want to be in a position where they have to work either.
Right.
Because that just takes the fun out of the work. And especially if you can't find good work, you know what I mean? Like what happens then? You know, you need the money, you need the income, but you can't find it. That's a lot different than I just need something to find to continue to occupy my brain and to be creative and to be productive.
Interactive with people.
Yeah.
And be needed, you know? And part of. Yeah.
That's a totally different scenario. So
totally, totally different.
I think it's hard for younger people to think like that because you're told that you've got time. That's what the market tells you, right? You have time. You can
great point.
You can bear the ups and downs of whatever the market has done historically, right? If you just leave it there, you'll have time. It'll work out. But now you're seeing the results of that from people who have done that for the last 3 or 4 decades. All the different products that have come and go, all the different crashes and booms of the markets, whether you're talking about real estate or stocks, you know, they weathered it and look what happened. Because this same, you know, that group of people, all of them had either 401ks, pensions that didn't work out, right? The company decides to fire you. They give you a severance or no severance.
Or they go broke.
Which was not guaranteed in the first place, right? The pension was not guaranteed.
Well, the PBGC is, they've had their own problems, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, don't, man, go listen to Mr. Barry Dyke and learn about what's really going on in those pensions and those funds for a lot of people.
You know, but look, Blake here, this is December 2025. And the gold market's at an all-time high. The silver market's at an all-time high. The stock market's at an all-time high. Crypto, you know, is at an all-time high a couple of weeks ago, and then it, you know, it's corrected some. But, I mean, we're looking at all-time highs. People should – that would mean if you were young, you could weather all of these and your timing is just right and you're ready to retire, you know, just like sell it all right now and you'd walk away with a win.
I'm glad you brought this up because when's the best time to buy an investment like that? Is it when it's at an all-time high?
Oh,
or when it's taking a crazy dip and everybody's in fear?
Yeah.
Right? Do we even know, right? That's investing.
Who's going to call the high?
Who's got the stomach
for that? We can look back and see clearly all the highs and the lows, but then you're in it, yeah. I mean, done some day trading and stuff, haven't you?
Yes.
I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know.
I've done just about everything out there.
Well, why aren't you still day trading? Because I remember one time you were pretty excited about that.
Yep. And I made money on it, but that's a very active position.
Yeah.
And it can be a very stressful position, depending on what's going on.
It just didn't fit you, huh?
Again, if you're thinking long range, what kind of life do I want to live? How do these things then play into that decision that I made on how I want to live?
Do I
want to spend however many hours it takes every day? And that's just within that time. Sometimes you go to bed thinking about the decision you made that day.
What?
And that's real estate. That's stocks.
That's what came to my mind.
Right? It's all kinds of stuff, right?
I don't want to be on a beach somewhere and get a bunch of sand in my laptop. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because you got to make that trade, right?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, there's a lot to be said for simplicity, again.
Yeah.
Foregoing what might look like a higher rate of return or interest rate, you know, today for what will surely be higher with a long-term thought process that's well thought out and executed, right? There's something to be said for that. We just don't know about that because that's not normal. That's not mainstream. That's not what everybody else is doing. Like you said, everything's at an all-time high.
Yeah.
Which is why people want to buy into it now, because again, they have fear of missing out. But if you ask somebody like a Warren Buffett or somebody who would really be a professional trader, they're not buying right now. They're waiting for a dip or a crash or whatever.
Buffett's like the epitome of a hodler.
Yeah, he's got the most cash he's ever had on hand. So they say, you know. And then, I don't own any Berkshire stock, so
I can't afford any.
I try to read the little things when they come out every now and then, but
well, Charlie Munger just passed, I think.
Yes.
Sometime.
A year ago, 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. And I'm bringing that up because I seen a clip of him talking about diversification, you know, and it's, which I've said a long time, and I'm not saying I said it before him at all. I probably heard it from him, but it's like, you know, people diversify when they don't know what they're doing. When they don't know what to do. And I have that conversation pretty regularly, just even in a conversation I referenced earlier, little lady, like, you know, shouldn't I diversify? Into what?
The business owners that I know that are successful want to invest more and more in their business.
What? The most profitable thing they have? Them?
The most successful real estate investors that I know. What do they want to invest in?
More real estate.
Right? Because they've gained an expertise. They've built a body of work and they understand it.
Yeah.
And they're building on it as they go. Each property that you buy should be a better purchase, a better deal than the last ones. Hopefully if you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the case with diversification. Mm-hmm. You're just sort of spreading out the, you know, risk in different risk classes that you might not even understand what the risk is.
No, we don't understand that, but we'll rebalance every year, okay?
Yeah, according to whose advice.
Well, look, speaking of that, look, do you hear you're coming up on the fifth year? Look, are you looking at concentration in life insurance? I mean, I know you buy life insurance, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and you're an agent. Mm-hmm. You've been an agent for a couple of years now.
Yep.
So, and my point is, you know, here the market's at an all-time high. You've had your experience in real estate and trading and the different things, and you've done more than that. I mean, do you feel like you're in a place of where as you, I guess, I don't know, experience maybe with time and experience, you see if you pay a premium, what happens? it's doing what you expected it to do, or better, or not. You know, dividends go up and down, but last few years dividends have gone up, or remain the same with some of the marginal companies that I won't mention. So just apply your thinking, whether you're buying at a high or low, diversify or concentration. Yeah. I mean, point blank, do you want to buy more life insurance? Are you trying to, you know, how is that, what we've just covered, discussed, you know, affected your view of life insurance that you own personally?
Personally, yes. I'm not a salesman either, okay? And I know we all can get a bad rap because we ultimately have to try to help somebody get a product to implement this process, right? But I truly believe and get paid for it, right? Which is great, right? You provide a good service, that's the exploration of value, right? You get paid for your work. So I believe that money has to go somewhere. It's going to go in somebody else's bank, somebody else's institution. It's going to benefit somebody else. So thus, I don't believe I can pay enough premium. If I'm going to make more money, it has to have a place to reside. That's going back to what I said in the beginning with ultimately, where am I storing my wealth? Where is our family going to build their warehouse of wealth? Like, what's the main place? Real estate's great. Stocks are great. Precious metals are great. But is that the first place? Is that the safest place? Does that place have the guarantees I want? Does it have the simplicity of management that I want? Can I pass it to my family as easy as I want to, right? That's what this is. So I will probably get as many as I can, and I know we will never get all we want because the insurance company won't underwrite it
So that's well said.
The goal in the book is somewhat, you know, income should equal premiums at some point, right? But that's a lifelong goal, theoretical goal, right? Because what you're doing is you're earning an income, you're earning the dollars, and you're putting them somewhere. And I believe that this is the best place to start. If you find an opportunity somewhere, go get it. If you've got an expertise in some other asset class that's going to pay you what you would feel like is a higher rate of return, and you want to take the risk of the difference of what you're already getting here and making some more there, everybody's got the freedom to do that. But I'm willing to build this, this base first.
I'm glad you said that. Excuse me. It's like you know, it's not an either or choice, right? It's an and asset. So if I buy life insurance in a well thought out, well constructed, you know, I put some time, effort, and energy to understanding what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and whom I'm doing it with, you know, and I'm paying a premium.
Yep.
All right, and I'm accumulating capital. There's real legitimate capital formation on purpose, with intent, and discipline, right? But I love crypto. Or I love precious metal, or I love something else, whatever it is. And I want to be my own banker, right? And I really love that over there. And I think I can go get 20, 30, 40% rate of return over a reasonable holding period. Because those types of conversations and presentations occur within the infinite banking footprint.
And they should. That's a part of life.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I don't disagree. But my question here is, so let's say a policy loan rate is 5.75. It could be 4.85 to 6.75 currently. That covers most all of the, you know, legitimate mutual life insurance companies in North America, to my knowledge.
Yep.
Right. 4.85 to 6.75. Not even going to talk about the direct or non-direct recognition for you life insurance gurus. It's okay. You can have that argument.
They're going to bring it up anyways.
I don't really care anymore. You know, it's like you do you, boo.
That's right.
Whomever you are. Okay. So if I can go borrow money at 6, and I love this thing over here, whatever it is. Right. You know, I'm gonna buy crypto at a 40% low, recent 40% low from a recent high.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Why wouldn't I do that? And then my question, a follow-up question is, when you don't do that, but you have the ability, you have the desire, you have the ability because you have the capital, you have the desire because you don't, you know, you love this other asset, whatever it is, and you don't want to miss out. Yep. You have the ability, but then you don't do that. Why in the world not? I think that my question is centers around, and I'm kind of going toward the idea that that's about half the time a BS argument because people don't really do that.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not a lot of people don't do that.
Or
talk
they
about
do it
that.
And they lose and don't tell you about it.
Yeah. I'm just saying that you obviously didn't love that asset thing over there so much that you're willing to spend 6% actual interest charge to the life insurance company collateralizing your policy to go do that. Right. And so help me, you know, make that connection. It's like I just call BS. Mm. Right now, do people collateralize their policies to do outside investment? Of course they do. Right. Should they? If they know what they're doing, if they're aware of what's going on, they should. Yep. I think there's just a lot of presentations, a lot of conversation that's really just an exercise in conversation is all it is because they don't really do that. And so if they don't really do that, then either they don't really love that investment, right? So
don't get a policy with the understanding that you're going to take a loan to go do that.
Yeah. I find that in some of the conversations and presentations and discussions, you know, I find an awful lot of them interesting, and then a lot of them are just people talking, you know. And anyway.
That's a part of that same conversation that's out there, though. It's flawed thinking. You know, the whole financial paradigm is flawed.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it falls right in, you know, with, I mean, I think the noise and FOMO, which I've said several times, and I mean, it's clear to me that the FOMO, fear of missing out, and the noise are, you just can't separate. It's almost like it takes a, you know, only the word of God to, can separate the soul and the spirit. You know, they're so intertwined that they can't be separated. Mm. You know, I could be wrong, but that's my current perception that's developed over some time.
Well, all that noise is a part of one system.
Yep.
And this is something that's outside of that system.
You know, and I think I brought this up before, not sure, but I have a lovely client, smart individual, successful, and he called a couple of years ago. It was on a Saturday because I'm hanging out at the pool. I just happened to be inside to, you know, refresh my beer, whatever. But the phone rang and I picked it up and we had a conversation. I don't drink. I'm kidding. And he said, "Hey James, I'm just calling to thank you." I'm like, "What are you doing?" You know? He's like, "Well, no, really, I'm just calling to thank you." I'm like, "Thank me for what?" He said, "Well, you know, let me share with you what I've done." So he goes out and he loses a healthy six-figure amount on two different crypto coins or exchanges. I don't know. And I'm like, "Man, that's bad news. That's terrible. I hate to hear that." He said, no. He said, "I'm calling to thank you because I did that through policy loans, right? So I paid all these premiums over this time and collateralized it and went and did that investment. A couple of them, they both go bad. And I'm thanking you because you helped me put in place what I had in place, and I don't have to build it or tear it down and start all over. I don't have to tear it down and rebuild it. Yep. Yes, we lost the money. It's not ever going to return. Yep. But all I have to do is repay the policy loans because the cash values never stopped earning interest and dividends. They never quit compounding. They never stopped.
Yep.
And so he's got loan interest that he's obviously going to pay. You know, and the band that, you know, that'll put a new perspective on it.
So what other asset class gives you that? Access to it on your own terms for a payback schedule if and when you want to pay it back. It's growing even when you take a loan against it. So, right? So you've taken out some of the equity and you're still getting increase.
You're just collateralizing.
Right? You don't have to sell the asset if it goes south. Right? And that may be kudos to you. It was built properly. You went through the proper, you know, process and figured out what was best for that individual. And
yeah, well,
and it's built with flexibility, right? Because these policies do have flexibility.
Yeah, it was built properly. Yeah. And I was just relating the story, and that was out of his mouth. I'm not taking any credit other than I've done what I do for a long time, so I fully believe I do it correctly for the individual. So, but it's him and his thinking. You know, he's like, oh my gosh. And I mean, talk about financial stress. That's a lot of money. I don't care who you are. When you're talking about healthy six-figure amounts, that's a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
You know, that causes a lot of stress in the family.
Yeah.
And they work through all that, and he's like, oh my gosh, you see the light at the end of the tunnel? Oh my gosh, I'm in a better position than I would have been otherwise.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I feel good about that.
That's great. Hopefully people listen to that and they can see how this can be beneficial for them.
Yeah, I hope so.
Even when we mess up, even when life happens, it's still there for us.
You know, Nelson said that it covers an awful lot of sin.
There you go.
You know, so, and it does, and it can.
Yep.
All right, look, we've been going about an hour.
Wow. All right.
I know. Time flies.
Great conversation with a good friend.
There you go. You have any, you want to say anything else? Any closing points? Anything?
Just grateful for you, grateful for this process. You know, it's pretty cool to know that what we set out, we took time to set out and have a long-term plan that it's not only achievable, but it's not that hard to do.
It's not that hard, is it?
No.
Well, what would you tell people if they found anything interesting in what we've said? And people love you. Okay, so they will. You know what? if this was your first time hearing that in fact there is a possibility, a realistic possibility, therefore an opportunity to literally become your own banker and control the banking function and understand what that means in your own life, where would you encourage people to start or continue their learning?
Well, you're going to need help. And that's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. And the first pieces of help, opportunities you have to help yourself are the book and Nelson's seminar that's on either DVD or digital format from the Nelson Nash Institute at infinitebanking.org.
So becoming your own banker.
That's where you start. Becoming your own banker, the book. And Nelson Nash produced a DVD.
6.5-hour DVD.
Yep. And that's where you need to start.
And that's Nelson Nash himself giving his
what a thought
presentation.
Actually learn it from the man that many people don't want to give credit for putting this body of work together, right? Which he did. Right? Everybody wants to get on him about the loan provision and a whole life policy and all this has been around, blah, blah, blah. But no, nobody took the time to not only put something together, but to then go teach people in person, traveling across the country in his 80s on how they could become their own banker. I think he deserves the credit, and I think you should do your best to learn as much as you can about his concept from him, which that's where that starts, his book and his seminar.
Totally agree.
And then you can get in touch with me when you want to get your learning to the next level and figure out how to actually implement the process.
Well, before that, I would insert, for those that have an interest in learning, it would be Building Your Warehouse of Wealth, Nelson's second book.
Yes.
And then I would add How Privatized Banking Really Works by Carlos Lara and Dr. Robert Murphy. All right. And then I would add Brian Griggs, depending on how deep you want to go. I mean, if you want to continue learning. And once you start down the rabbit hole and it resonates, you're going to want to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is How to Buy Whole Life, a framework for
great
the infinite
book.
Banking concept.
Ryan Griggs did a huge favor for all of us in writing that book.
I'm very proud of that book.
Yes.
Very, very.
Yes. Yes.
And then look Blake up. Then call Blake. All right. So I like it. I mean, that's what, if you wanted to learn more at your own pace,
please start there. There's a bunch of information out there, but learn it from the source. What a foreign concept. Learn something from the source of the information.
Yeah. I agree. I just wanted to leave with that. So I had fun. Thanks for, you know, spending the time.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you.
All right.
Always.
Hope you enjoy listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.